This podcast is brought to you by Audible. Have you been wanting to read more, but don't seem to have the time? Well, with Audible, you can read your books without having to find the extra time in your busy schedule. Stuck in traffic on your way home from work? Why not marathon the Harry Potter books? In the gym and want to learn about the First Lady? Well, you can listen to Becoming Michelle Obama while doing leg day. And if you go to audibletrial.com/cultivate, you get a month free of Audible. That includes one credit that you can trade in for any audiobook of your choice, access to thousands of audiobooks free to listen to with your account, and best of all, you have access to all of your favorite podcasts in the app as well. So be sure to go to my link, audibletrial.com/cultivate. That's C-U-L-T-I-V, the number 8, to sign up for a free month of Audible and start reading today. Thank you, Audible, for supporting the show.
I know that we did the right thing because I saw the sign of Christ in her hands. She was bearing stigmata, and that was a sign from God that we should exorcise the demons. She died to save other lost souls, to atone for their sins. These were the words spoken by Anna Mikkel, the mother of Annelise Mikkel. Annelise was a German woman who had 67 Catholic exorcism rites performed on her. By the age of 20, she had developed an intolerance for many religious artifacts and was hearing voices. Despite medicine, her illness worsened and she became suicidal, as well as exhibiting other symptoms for which she was treated. Mikkel and her family became convinced that she was possessed by a demon after 5 years of taking psychiatric drugs failed to alleviate her symptoms. Exorcisms were started by the priests and the parents ceased attending doctors. After 67 exorcism sessions, Annelise Mikkel stopped eating and would die of malnutrition and dehydration at the age of 23. This is the tragic story of Annelise Mikkel. Well, hello, my fellow weirdos. It's your master of the macabre, your sultan of the spooks, your host, Dom, and welcome to episode 28 of Horror House, True Crime and the Macabre. I hope everyone is feeling fantastic on this Friday. Camp is almost over for me, which makes me incredibly sad, but it's been an unbelievable experience and I've loved every single minute of it. And it's something that I will never forget. But it's almost time for my 3 weeks of traveling the east of the US. And it's almost time to see Boston, to see Florida, to break my Disney World virginity, to spend some time in Pennsylvania, to see Virginia. And I am fucking buzzing. Anyway, let's get to today's topic. And today, we have a little bit something different. It's not a true crime case. It's not an unexplained mystery or an unexplained murder or an unsolved, you know, murder. I'm doing something I haven't done in a while, and that is a paranormal case or an allegedly paranormal case. And that is the tragic story of Annelise Mikkel, who died a absolutely horrendous death after nearly 70 exorcisms, dehydration, and starvation. I will do my best to keep this as light as I possibly can, but this is going to be pretty brutal. And it will also probably be a little bit on the shorter side because there's not a massive amount of information. So it will be a bit of a shorter episode, but I will try and keep it light where I can. So let's get rocking and rolling. Annelise Mikkel was born on September the 21st, 1952, in Liepfing, Bavaria, West Germany, to a Roman Catholic family. Her parents, Joseph and Anna, raised her and her three sisters. She was a devout Catholic who would attend Mass twice a week. When Annelise was 16, she suddenly blacked out at school and began walking around in a daze. Though Annelise did not remember the event, her friends and family said she was in a trance-like state. A year later, Annelise Mikkel experienced another occurrence where she woke up in a trance and wet her bed. Her body would also go through a series of convulsions, causing her body to shake uncontrollably. After this second incident, Annelise would visit a neurologist who diagnosed her with temporal lobe epilepsy, a disorder that can cause seizures, loss of memory, and visual and auditory hallucinations. Temporal lobe epilepsy can also cause Geschwind syndrome, a disorder that is marked by hyper-religiosity. Mikkel would have a third seizure in the psychiatric institution where she was being treated in June 1970. And for the first time, she was given anti-convulsion medication, including Dilantin, which did not help her. She started talking about seeing demon faces at different times of the day. She was also prescribed periciazine, a medicine which is comparable to chlorpromazine that is used to treat a variety of psychoses, including schizophrenia, abnormal behavior, and delusions in the same month. By 1973, she had depression and began hallucinating while praying and complained about hearing voices telling her that she was damned and would rot in hell. Mikkel's stay in a psychiatric facility had little effect on her health and her depression worsened. Long-term treatment did not assist and she became increasingly unhappy with the medical intervention after 5 years of using pharmacological. It's one of those medications. Mikkel would develop a dislike for Christian holy places and items such as the crucifix. Mikkel would travel to San Damiano with a family friend who organized Christian pilgrimages on a regular basis. Because she couldn't walk past the cross and wouldn't drink the water from a Christian holy spring, her escort would believe that she was possessed by demons. The family friend would state, Annelise told me, and Frau Hein confirmed this, that she was unable to enter the shrine. She approached it with the greatest hesitation, then said that the soil burned like fire and she simply could not stand it. She then walked around the shrine in a wide arc and tried to approach it from the back. She looked at the people who were kneeling in the area surrounding the little garden, and it seemed to her that while praying, they were gnashing their teeth. She got as far as the edge of the little garden and then she had to turn back. Coming from the front again, she had to avert her gaze from the picture of Christ. She made it several times to the garden but could not get past it. She also noted that she could no longer look at the medals or the pictures of saints. They sparkled so immensely that she could not stand it. Mikkel and her family, as well as her neighborhood, grew persuaded and sought an exorcism from numerous priests. The priests declined, advising the family to continue with medical care and informing them that exorcisms required approval from the bishop. When a person fits all of the criteria for an exorcism, they are regarded to be suffering from possession, also known as infestatio, and under demonic domination, according to the Catholic Church. Some of the first signs of this are an intense disdain for religious things and supernatural abilities. At this point, Annelise's delusions had become extreme. Believing she was possessed, she would rip the clothes off her body, display self-harm, compulsively perform up to 400 squats a day. 400 squats a day. Jesus, like, I need to get possessed because that's the only way that I'm ever going to do 400 squats a day. That's an insane number of squats. She also would crawl under a table and bark like a dog for 2 days. She also ate spiders and coal, bit the head off of a dead bird, and licked her own urine from the floor. Annelise and Ozzy, biting the heads off of animals. Always nice to have things in common with others, isn't it? Mikkel would begin treatment with Tegretol. I think that's what that says. Tegretol, an anti-seizure and mood stabilizer in November 1973. During the religious rites, she was provided antipsychotic medications, which she used on a regular basis until she died. Mikhail's symptoms deteriorated despite taking these neuroleptic drugs, and she began growling, seeing demons, and throwing things. So at this point, Annelise is not having the best of times. She's not having a good time. Unfortunately, it will only get much worse. But before we get to that, let's hear from the guys who are the hosts of the awesome podcast, You're Gonna Eat That Crust.
You start the car, you go in the house, you jerk it, and if it's not warmed up when you're done, you got your zippy.
You gotta warm up your car, you might as well get yourself warmed up too.
I don't eat meat in a bag.
I don't eat meat in a bag, I won't eat meat in a box. I can think of worse ways to spend, an hour?
I'm like, I'll drink the milk a couple days past the day that's on there. But for whatever reason, I'm like...
Insomniac Snack can be found everywhere you get your pods, like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Good Pods, iHeartRadio, and many more.
Wake the fuck up.
That's some New York shit right there. That's some real New York shit. Leftover Chinese food. That's just like straight out of a Wu-Tang album.
And we are back. So let's continue this macabre tale. So finally, Annelise and her mother found a priest called Ernst Alt, who believed in her possession. He stated that she didn't look like an epileptic in later court documents. I mean, what does an epileptic look like? Do they look like completely alien to people that aren't? Like, do they look like completely different to someone who isn't epileptic? How could you use that as a base just to go, yeah, this girl possessed you, grab the crucifixes, get the holy water. I need the sage. Get me the sage. Alt believed she was suffering from demonic possessions and urged the local bishop to allow an exorcism. In a letter to Alt in 1975, Mikhail would write, "I am nothing. Everything about me is vanity. What should I do? I have to improve. You pray for me." And also once told him, "I want to suffer for other people, but this is so cruel." Alt would petition the local bishop Joseph Stangl, who eventually approved the request and granted a local priest called Arnold Renz permission to perform an exorcism, but ordered that it be carried out in complete secrecy. So why was Annelise subjected to multiple exorcisms? Well, exorcisms have existed in various cultures and religions for millennia, but the practice became popular in the Catholic Church in the 1500s, with priests who would use the Latin phrase, vade retro satana, which translates to "go back, Satan," to expel demons from their mortal hosts. The practice of Catholic exorcism was codified in the Ritual Romanum, a book of Christian practices assembled in the 16th century. But by the 1960s, exorcisms were extremely rare among Catholics. But a rise in movies and books like The Exorcist in the early 1970s would cause a renewed interest in the practice. Over the next 10 months following the bishop's approval of Annelise's exorcism, Alt and Renz would conduct 67 exorcism sessions, one or two sessions a week, lasting up to 4 hours at a time. Mikhail started talking about dying to atone for the wayward youth of the day and the apostate priests of the modern church, and she eventually would refuse to eat. Her parents would also stop contacting doctors and instead relied completely on exorcism rites at this point. Through these sessions, Annelise revealed that she believed she was possessed by 6 demons: Lucifer, Cain, Judas Iscariot, Adolf Hitler, Nero, and Fleischmann, who was a disgraced priest. All these spirits would jostle for power of Annalise's body and would communicate from her mouth with a low growl. As a result of all these sessions and among other things, you know, the starvation, the dehydration, Mikkel would die in her home on July the 1st, 1976. The cause of death, according to the post-mortem report, was malnutrition and dehydration caused by nearly a year of semi-starvation while the exorcism ceremonies were performed. She would weigh only 66 pounds when she died, and also had suffered broken knees from genuflections, which is the act of bending one knee to the ground in prayer. She was reportedly unable to move at all without assistance and had also contracted pneumonia. Annalise Mikkel would be only 23 when she would die, and she didn't go peacefully. You know, she went in an absolutely horrific way, and I can't imagine just the pain and the misery that she was in. Like, I just can't. After her death, Annalise's story became a national sensation in Germany after her parents and the two priests who conducted the exorcisms were charged with negligent homicide. They came before the court and would even use a recording of the exorcisms to try and justify their actions. Erich Schmidt-Lichner defended the parents, and their lawyers were paid by the church. The state requested that none of the persons involved be imprisoned. Instead, the priests to be fined, and the prosecution ruled that the parents should be excused from punishment because they had suffered enough, which was a requirement in German penal law. This may be controversial, but I think the parents should have been charged with negligent homicide. In my opinion, they let their child die. They could have saved Annalise. They saw her suffering and they didn't do anything to stop it. So no, I don't think they suffered enough. Thank you for attending my TED talk. The trial would begin on March the 30th, 1978 in the district courts and received a lot of attention. Doctors testified in court that Mikkel was not possessed, claiming it was a psychological effect due to her strict religious upbringing and her epilepsy. However, during the exorcism, Dr. Richard Roth, who was asked for medical assistance by Alt, would allegedly tell her, "There is no injection against the devil, Annalise." According to Schmidt-Lichner, the exorcism was legal since the German constitution would protect citizens' rights to freely exercise their religious views. To prove that Mikkel was possessed, the defense showed cassette tapes captured at exorcism sessions, sometimes with what was believed to be demons bickering. When approving the exorcism, the bishop claimed he was unaware of her grave health state and would refuse to testify. In April 1978, the defendants were found guilty of negligent homicide and given suspended prison sentences, as well as being ordered to pay the costs of the proceedings. The punishments were described as stiffer than the prosecutor's request, which was for the priest to be simply fined and the parents to be found guilty but not punished. The approval of such an old-fashioned exorcism rite by the church gained widespread public and media interest. The case, according to John M. Duffy, involved a misdiagnosis of mental illness. Following the trial, the parents would request permission from the authorities to exhume their daughter's remains. The official reason given to authorities by Mikkel's parents was that she was buried in a hasty manner in a cheap casket. On February the 25th, 1978, over 2 years after her burial, her bones were reinterred in a new oak casket lined with tin. According to official records, the body showed evidence of persistent deterioration. The accused exorcists were forbidden from seeing Mikkel's remains. Arnold Renz would later claim that he was denied access to the mortuary. Her grave became, and still continues to be, a place of pilgrimage. Despite Pope Benedict's support for wider use of exorcisms compared to Pope John Paul II, who made restrictions harsher in 1999 involving only rare cases, the number of officially sanctioned exorcisms in Germany declined as a result of this case. On June 6, 2013, a fire would break out in Annelies Michel's childhood home. And while the local police would indicate it was a case of arson, several residents would blame it on the exorcism case. And that is the tragic story of Annelies Michel, a woman who was mentally ill and was allowed to die. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe she was possessed by six separate demons. But to me, this isn't a case of spirituality beating science. It's a case of a young woman who was allowed to die by people that should have known better. But that's just me. You know, don't hesitate to DM me on Instagram, on Twitter, and tell me your thoughts. I would love to know what people think about this case, because I think that it probably falls into two camps and there's no middle ground. So I'm intrigued. If you wanted to, like, if you are so inclined, please hit the DMs and be like, you know what, this is what I think about the Annelies Michel case. So when will the next episode be in your ear holes? Well, I will be back in the motherland in early September, but I won't be recording episodes as soon as I'm back, as I would take a week or two just to get resettled, you know, get my stuff back in order and all that shit. An episode probably will be coming out in September, but I don't have a date just yet. And unfortunately, there won't be an episode out until September, because it's impossible for me to record another episode because I'm going to be traveling. So yeah, September at some point. I just don't have a date yet. In the meantime, please follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at horrorhouse_pod. If you enjoy the show, please recommend the podcast to everyone. And I mean everyone. Your postman, your local MP, you know, that weird neighbor that you don't really talk to and you get a bit of a creepy vibe from. Recommend it to him or her. Also, don't forget to leave a rating on Spotify and a review on Apple Podcasts. Or the website. It's a small thing, but it helps me out massively, and it helps the show grow, and it helps the show reach even more people. So it's a tiny thing that will take 30 seconds, but it helps independent shows out so much. Also, check out the merch store too, and if you're so inclined, treat yourself and help me, you know, help me be able to carry on making many more episodes of this podcast that I quite enjoy. And lastly, check out all the shows on the Cultivate Network. We have some amazing podcasts here at Cultivate. So go and show them some love. Go and show them some love. They deserve it. So all that's left to say, my macabre minions, is until next time, stay spooky.